welcome to Tech Weekly, your one-stop shop for technology news and views from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky, your trail guide past the rocky outcroppings to the low-hanging fruit of technology discovery. Join me on our trip into the Silicon for 30 minutes of podcast goodness.
This is Toro Maximus, the 220-pound robot. That spinning drum on the front of Toro Maximus, made of stainless steel with 1-inch S7 steel teeth at top speed, 8,000 RPM. Very powerful. Once again, stay away from the arena. It will be shaking for this fight.
Yes, the robots have taken over the asylum here in Guardian Towers. And joining me to fight the onslaught of Skynet, Metal Mickey, and Wally is our fearless podcaster, Jemima Eva Kish. Bobby Johnson went to the Mecca of Mech and reports back from last weekend's RoboGames Android Olympics in San Francisco. Closer to home, we're hearing from SpoonFed, the latest listing service to offer personalized social planning for London's time rich. Now, Jemima, if I'm not mistaken, this is your last Tech Weekly for a while.
I'm going off to spawn.
You're going to have a bairn.
I can't believe there isn't a more high-tech solution to this, but apparently you just have to grow one for 9 months and then it comes out. And it's all very biological and organic.
I saw your bump move before.
It wiggled.
Oh my God, that was really...
It's not quite as freaky as when it's happening in your belly.
Well, we'll put that off for a little while, shall we? All this, plus updates from Jemima's belly and the latest news, your views from the blogs and more. Keep listening or we'll sick the toasters on you. First up, we have a message from the head office.
Am not human, but am a life form. Have soul.
Wally.
Eve.
That was the latest directive from our robot masters. If the Borg doesn't frighten you, if you don't have nightmares of T-1000 slithering into your bedroom at night, and if the idea of sentient machines using humans for battery power hasn't crossed your mind, you clearly have not been to the cinema in a while. Robots have captured the imaginations of movie makers and moviegoers for decades, not to mention all the sci-fi authors, and building them has become a hobby for thousands. Bobby Johnson is himself a robot fancier, purportedly writing a book on the subject, and so it was with transparent glee that he went to the RoboGames last weekend to see if there were any machines clever enough to make us flesh and blood Luddites obsolete.
My name is Chris Farrell, and I'm affiliated with Farrell Robotics.
And I'm Rob Farrell, and I'm his father.
Okay, so it's a father and son team. That's very exciting, and one of the heart-tugging things about robotics, I think, there. It's a family event, isn't it? So can you talk me through, you've got a display of robots here, but I just wondered if you could talk me through, are they all kind of related to each other, or do they operate in different ways?
So we've got several sets of the same humanoid robots. We basically make them in pairs, that way they can spar with each other, and we can practice and build upon two robots at the same time. That allows us to work twice as fast, and then we build another pair as another generation, and we have a new set of software and moves and all kind of mechanical structures for them.
I have to say, they move fantastically well. And there was one point when it falls over and it kind of does this slinky little move to stand back up again that I thought looked fantastic. But how long have you been working on them? How many generations of these have you seen?
The largest robot that we have here is the third generation. We've been working on the humanoid side of robots for about 4 years now. Been competing here. This will be our third time at RoboGames, I believe.
And how did you get into it? I mean, I'm assuming if you're a father and son outfit, that your dad was probably into it before you were. But I mean, what's the idea? Are you doing this for fun? Is this a business? I'm not sure. What's the?
We do it for fun. I think we're also building it eventually into a business, and it's a great learning experience. So today we're in a research phase. So we're continuing to develop the robots, and someday we hope that they'll be good enough that we can put together a model that we could potentially sell, or sell some of the technology that we develop.
What's the day job then? Are you involved in this sort of area anyway?
He's a professional student. My day job is I design medical instruments. So those medical instruments have some robotic aspects to them already.
How does this compare to previous years? Are people getting more interested in robotics as time goes on?
I think they are. I think it's a slow progression. The economy certainly impacts us a little bit this year. But what we are starting to see a lot of in the U.S. is family teams. Adults are interested in getting their kids interested, and the kids are incredibly interested in the robots. So I think there's going to be a lot more father-son efforts.
If these weren't your robots and you had to pick one other from the floor out here, which ones are your favorites?
I saw a Segway-like robot as a reclining chair or a wheelchair, if you will, and I really enjoyed that I was able to balance and carry someone and be able to move around on the floor.
My favorites are some of the Japanese full-size robots, actually. The HR-4C is really impressive. So, you know, those are the things we aspire to get to.
From Team Plum Crazy of Sacramento, California, Sewer Snake. Toro Maximus, the largest of Team Riobot's drum spinners, the 220-pound robot, weighing in at 209 pounds today.
My name under this is Kanner Mefa, and I built this with a friend of mine, Tracy Jacobs. We built this, it's based off Theo Jansen's legs. I don't know if you've ever seen his beach walkers. So we tried to do these with the motors so that it's robotic.
So how's it working? Because it ran up to me a minute ago and I just stood there to see all the kids were stamping around it. But does that make any difference?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't really have senses yet. We're still in the early stages of development, so we'll probably add sensors for motion detection and distance sensing.
Have you worked on other robots? I mean, is this?
This is actually our first robot.
Okay. And what started you on the whole path?
I had millipedes. And my first attempt at robots was a millipede, but I was just too green, and so I couldn't get that to work. So this is my first working robot.
Yeah. There definitely is a kind of a slightly creepy insectoid nature to the way it crawls along. Have you looked at lots of other robots this weekend as well?
Oh, yeah. There's some really nice ones.
What have been the ones that you've enjoyed the most?
Well, I love the sphere robots, and a lot of the firefighting robots are really cool.
How has the weekend been as a whole? Have you enjoyed it?
Oh yeah, it's been really fun. I hope it happens again.
Once again, stay away from the arena. It will be shaking for this fight. And this fight will begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fight! Toro Maximus spinning up to speed, Sewer Snake missing with the early charge. You can hear the drum of Toro Maximus whirring away as they begin to attack. Sewer Snake's wheel and wedge. Sewer Snake hitting the wedge. Hitting the drum with the wedge. Sewer Snake trying to keep the wedge pointed at Toro Maximus at all times. Toro Maximus wants to get to one of the other parts of Sewer Snake to start blasting away wheels. But Sewer Snake underneath.
Eduardo Risto. The team is Riobots. Our team is based in Rio, and we build combat robots.
Is this a regular fixture?
It is a regular fixture. We come every year since 2006.
And your robots all follow a similar design, don't they? They got this spinning disc kind of barrel on the front.
Yeah, it's just a drum with hardened tool steel teeth, and it's pretty effective design. We actually already won 4 medals. With this design.
I just saw a match in which one of your robots got thrown over the side, which was pretty incredible, I have to say.
That was really good.
That was our biggest robot. Actually, we built the Toro Maximus. It's our heavyweight, it's a 220-pound robot. The problem is to carry from all the way to Brazil to here. We managed, but it's been a lot of work. I think I've slept like 6 hours since Wednesday.
One last thing. So, I mean, obviously, this is fun. Do you hope to continue doing robotics in the future? Are you going to be the guy who gets robots that take over the world?
Actually, we do projects for oil companies and nuclear power plants in Brazil for inspection robots. That funds a little bit the team. I hope they don't take over the world, at least if I'm not in command.
That was Bobby Johnson with Edward Risto, Chris and Rob Farrell, and Kanner Mefa at RoboGames in San Francisco last weekend. You can read more about that in this week's technology section of the paper, out with The Guardian on Thursday. At the moment, I find that I spend my weekends recovering from work, staring into the middle distance until the alarm rings on Monday morning to announce the beginning of another week on the hamster wheel. Yes, my life, it's so exciting. Some enterprising people, however, use their free time creatively and productively, navigating the vast entertainment opportunities that are on offer. But in a metropolis like London, a city arguably that doesn't sleep, how on earth do you choose what to see and what to do? Spoonfed, a new startup based in the capital, has an idea. We welcome their co-founder, Alex Will, into our elevator to tell us all about it.
Welcome to Elevator Pitch.
Ground floor. Please mind the doors.
Which floor would you like?
I'm looking for the third floor. Apparently there's a really good house music party there.
Going up.
So who are you and what's your company?
Hi, I'm Alex Will and I'm the co-founder and co-CEO of Spoonfed.
Okay then, explain your business to my mum in two sentences.
Spoonfed, in a nutshell, is a 21st century version of Time Out. So the question that we answer is what's on events in London. We have a publication platform that allows us to aggregate all the events that are in London, and then we have a small team of editors that polish that so that you get good editorial content written by us that's trusted and properly categorized.
When were you founded?
In July 2007.
And where are you based?
We're based just north of Old Street.
First floor.
How are you funded then?
We're currently angel funded and are currently finishing another angel round.
So how do you make money?
Things like advertising and commissions from ticket sales are part of our business, but they don't form the core part of it. The primary revenue stream that Spoonfed's been developing is going to be launching in the next 6 weeks, and it's a product called Bullseye. It's basically a tool that allows event owners to effectively market their events online. We've built them a system of tools that makes them be able to manage their digital footprint, do their customer relationship management, and do that all from one place.
What's the weirdest thing that's happened to you in business?
Early on, when Henry, my business partner, and I started Spoonfed and we didn't have any money to pay people, Henry's a fantastic chef, so we put an ad up on Gumtree and said, you know, will you work for cooked lunches? And we did that for about 6 months in my basement, every day cooking three-course meals. And you'll be surprised what people will do for good food.
Second floor.
How are personalization and recommendation part of your business?
We try to work hard to have deep categorization, so it's not rock, pop, and jazz as one category, because they're not the same thing. So we've started with a very straightforward recommendation model in the sense of it's revealed preferences. And as our user base grows, we're going to work on the kind of algorithm side for the recommendations, because we didn't want to spend time building a system without enough data. And further to that, in terms of recommendations, we believe strongly also that people or your friendship group know you best. And sometimes algorithms will fall short. So we've built simple mechanisms where you can make a plan with your friends and suggest stuff. Because in the end, my best friend really knows what I like.
How many users do you have now? And what's your target within 12 months?
Currently, we have a little over 100,000 unique users. And for the end of this, for 12 months from now, we'd like to be on somewhere around 1 million unique users. Having said that, we know it takes time, particularly in getting up the search rankings, and hence we have a focus of a revenue stream which actually drives money off-site.
Third floor.
Which tech businesses or web thinkers are the ones to watch?
The obvious ones are places like Moo, which I think is amazing. I've also been playing around with the new Songkick, and I think that's an awesome new site, and congratulations to Ian and their team, because they work very, very hard. One that I met in the States that I really like, that I haven't seen much of here, something called Aputure, and it is a browsing solution for when you're reading a news story. It's a bit like Cool Iris, but you can hover over, let's say, a link, and you can then immediately see the Wikipedia entry or a video that goes with it without having to leave the page.
Where do you want to be in 5 years' time?
I'd like the company to be in all the major European cities across the UK and also in the United States in, you know, the 5 to 10 major urban metropolises, because that's where Spoonfed really works, in a vibrant city where there's a lot going on and you often feel like you miss out on really interesting things just because life gets a bit busy.
Doors opening.
That was Alex from spoonfed.co.uk. Now, Jemima, there are already so many of these kinds of things out there on the internet. Why is Spoonfed any different?
Well, just because there's lots of them, that doesn't mean that somebody else shouldn't come along and have another go and see if they can't improve on it. as Alex said, I think the big competitor in his space is Time Out. But it always looks incredibly outdated to me, and it's very stuck in a kind of, you know, we're based on a print magazine that people pick up at tube stations kind of model. And frankly, somebody needs to take a fresh look at that, I think.
There are other more well-established sites, like, for example, lastminute.com. That offers a similar kind of thing as well. So
it seems to me that
I can't really see what the unique selling point of this particular product is.
But Last Minute does a lot of stuff. You know, do you go there to find out what's on in London tonight, or do you go there to find a flight? Because actually, I think they're probably doing too much. The really interesting thing about Spoonfed, and remember as well that the guy that's giving them a lot of advice and mentoring is Kevin Ayres, who is the UK or the European MD of LinkedIn. So, I mean, that says quite a lot about, you know, he must obviously really think there's something worth supporting in this. The really interesting thing is that they're pursuing a sort of recommendation model. So like a Last.fm for kind of events and stuff, if you like. That could be really powerful and far more relevant if you think about, you know, going out on your iPhone app and stuff, you know. And if they combine recommendation with your location to particularly sweet spots of sort of, you know, web startups at the moment, they could really be onto something quite powerful. It's a very clean, very nice looking site, and I'm just very interested to see where it goes.
Do you use technology though to find out what you're going to do, whether you're at home or whether you're out and about?
Well, I'm just about to never go out ever again because I'm going to have a baby. But yes, I do, and I find that online actually there isn't anywhere near enough stuff that is efficient enough.
Well, if you've got your own startup and you'd like to get into our lift, then get in touch at tech@guardian.co.uk. And there's another startup surgery that's happening next week, isn't there, Jemima? Peter Finney is coming in to give advice. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, he's going to be giving advice on intellectual property, which is a red-hot area of concern for startups. If you have a concern, you can email it to us, which is tech@guardian.co.uk. Or you could send a comment in through Twitter to @GuardianTech or @JemimaKish, and we will pick it up and we will read all your questions to him.
Excellent. Well, that's next week. Thanks very much, Jemima. There has been a whole lot of tech news over the past week, which means that our blogs have been going nonstop. What's been the best thing that you've seen on PDA, Jemima?
Comment-wise.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, loads of stuff, as ever. But there was quite an interesting report coming out ahead of those top-level domains being opened out early next year. So for $185,000, snip, you can buy, you could buy .alex.
Yes, please.
As a TLD. But the Future Lab and Gandhi.net did a bit of a survey asking whether people thought this was an idea or whether it would just be more clutter. And perhaps not surprisingly, they said, no, this will just be more clutter. And they also weren't very clear why ICANN is looking after it and didn't really think they were necessarily the right organisation to look after it, but also that they're very US-focused, which was a comment that the European Commission came up with. So only 18% of people think that ICANN should be in charge of domains because they're just too important. Diplo came on and said, quite rightly, the whole system is designed to make money for the registrars, not to make things easier for either the public or companies and organisations. All it will mean is more cyber squatting and companies having to desperately buy up even more permutations to protect their brand, which is a pretty bloody good point, really. Also goes on to say, better to scrap all top-level domains, which I'm not quite sure I agree with.
I'm not quite sure in favour of what? Going back to the old .com system?
So there is only one Nike or one Guardian domain with subdomains used where a company may want to localise content for different markets. That sort of sounds like a bit, like, even more complicated to me, but it's a very interesting area. I don't think I'm going to be forking out $185,000 for .jemima.
.jemima. Well, you'd have to get in quite quickly because there are quite a few Jemimas out there in the world.
I know.
Well, over on the games blog, Keith was talking about a quite bizarre marketing stunt that THQ did for one of their games. The marketing people said, quote, "We thought it would make for an interesting experiment to find out how many people going about their everyday business would stop in a busy city street to work out some stress by smashing their way into a car," right? The car was on a city street. There was a loosely tied sledgehammer not far away from it, and there were copies, 100 copies of this particular game in the back seat, by smashing their way into a car to earn a copy of the brand new game. Right, I can see how this is going to work. The picture, by the way, on the games blog sort of says it all. Ginger Yellow 1 says, adds to this conversation, given that the bloke pictured is doing it in full view of a cameraman, I somewhat suspect that there was signage at a minimum. Very curious hammer action too, yes, because what he's doing what I like to call the Thor hammer, the sort of sideways.
Like on the Rank sort of ident.
Yes.
In the cinema.
Exactly.
Yes.
Bong. Exactly. He says,
man with a gong.
He says, it's quite gongy, yes. He says, surely the natural and most satisfying action would be arms outstretched, Olympic hammer event style.
Yes.
So go have a look at the picture on guardian.co.uk/tech/blogs/games. You'll find it if you search for Games Blog, I promise. Meanwhile, our most prolific Facebook wall commentator, Simon Thurston, enjoyed last week's debate about paper versus print coverage of technology, although he's taken to a bit of pop psychologizing of our podders. He says, really enjoyed the podcast, especially the small part on the differences between the modern web-based blogging versus papers and the old school printed paper. And he says, it seems I detected a little bit of frustration stroke aggression about the lack of solid evidence used in blogging-based news from Charles. Unfortunately, Charles isn't here to refute that. But I can say he looked just as calm as he normally looks when he was talking about that. So if that means anything, the power of radio compels you. Meanwhile, over on Twitter, our listeners have been predicting when the robots will take over. And one of our regular contributors, TomBot18, he says the clue, of course, is in the name. He says it's only a matter of time. We will be bowing down to our robot overlords before you can say logical paradox. And meanwhile, Guy Clapton and Technolama both think that it's already too late. Guy Clapton says, checks office, a couple years ago. Meanwhile, Technolama says, the internet is a ruse to keep us glued to our computers to extract energy to feed the hive brain. And Molotow expects that the bots will take it one step further. He comments, Gartner says that sensors will be more than 20% of non-video net traffic by 2012, so expect machines only gossip version of Heat magazine in 2013. So if you've got something to say and just have to say it, then get in touch. This week, we want to know what a robot-controlled future will look like. So do let us know. For all the links you need to contact us, head to guardian.co.uk/techweekly. That's it for this week. Many thanks to all of our guests, including the robots at RoboGames and Alex from spoonfed.co.uk. Big props to Bobby for going to the Nexus of Mechanical Men, and Jemima, who will be leaving us for a few months to take on a brand spanking new position in life, that of being a mum.
Oh God, it's terrifying.
Yes, we will be without Miss Kish's dulcet tones for a little while, but you can expect that she and the newborn will be tweeting, blogging, and generally being digital somewhere out there on the World Wide Web. Jemima, what will you do?
I don't know. It's a bit scary. I mean, not the baby thing, that's fine. It's just the not working thing is really weird. I'll still be listening. I'll just be on the other side of the digital thing.
Thank you very much, Jemima. And as always, thank you to Scott, our producer, who keeps the show ticking over. I'm Alex Kratowski. We'll see you next week when we will be having our IP startup surgery.
Thanks, guys.
I'll see you soon.
Oh no, it's my last podcast. Oh God, I'm gonna be a fucking housewife.